Welcome, loyal and new listeners.
Welcome
to Historical. You're joined by me, myself, the Sheriff of the Kingly Borough of Bracknell, Newtown, Matt Nelson. And you're also joined by the King's Groom of the Stool, Wayne Bridgman.
Hello, listeners. Well, King's Groom of the Stool. What an intro. You're probably thinking...
Very important job, listeners. Very important job.
Well, you might be thinking, that's just Matt trying to be funny. But actually, you're right. It was an important job. That was a real job. Groom of the Stool. Can you imagine what that might be, listeners? Well,
I think we all know what a stool is. And it can be something you can sit on, or it's something you can... Well, it begins with an S.
It's rated to the butt. Yeah. Well, in the tradition of divine right, which placed kings at the level of gods, of course. For centuries, it was thought improper, Matt, for a king to wipe his own bottom.
Well, rightly so. Yeah. I mean, he has the hands of God, of course, you know, kingly powers.
Kingly hand. Well, Henry VIII,
of
course,
such things.
You know, Henry VIII, fat king, was no exception, and the groom of the stool was a prestigious position assigned to sort of a top-level aristocrat like myself, Matt. You were right. Although, thinking about it, though prestigious, yes, I'd say it's probably a little bit humiliating. It was a humiliating job because the groom was responsible for fetching the king's toilet chair.
Yeah.
When needed. He's got himself a little sort of kingly potty. Wiping his actual butt.
Yeah.
And also collecting the stool, poop, listeners, to those who don't know, for examination. A sort of monitoring of his health as well.
So in the UK we had a supposed doctor, Gillian McKeith, that used to examine people's stools, actually, and say whether they were healthy or not. It was later found out she actually wasn't a doctor, and there wasn't designed to be any medical benefit in what she was actually doing.
She was just a bit weird.
Good UK television, though. It was
unusual. Lastly, the groom of the stool also had the privilege of administering an enema, should the king find himself constipated. Yeah. So very much a close job for the king, you know, a confidant.
I mean, there's a massive queue for the job, especially with Henry VIII, who was known to feast on very fatty foods.
We digress in very much the wrong area.
Right, so... now, you probably don't realise, listeners, but before a podcast... We like to get into character, as you could.
Yes.
So after spending a few hours in a dark room, normally in a flotation tank.
Yeah, quiet time, yeah.
Getting into the very mind of the subject, getting into the, you know, persona, the attitude.
Visualising
what they are, what's their inner motive. Mm. We like to don the relevant attire.
Very important.
Now, Wayne here, sitting beside me, is feeling rather heroic. I can tell by the way he's dressed and, of course, the very, you know, macho and sort of heroic face that he's got from his meditation. But Wayne, tell the listeners what you've come dressed with, because they can only hear with their ears. They can't see with their eyes.
I'll paint a oral picture. Oral as an A-U.
Yes.
Now, listeners, this might give you a clue of what the podcast's about. If you're too lazy to not read the write-up or haven't noticed the title of the podcast we've downloaded, maybe you can guess it from what we're wearing. Let's see. So, basically what I've got here, Matt, I wanted to sort of model a sort of an Errol Flynn-style sort of green flanneling suit. It's got sort of frilly edges on it, you know?
Yeah. I can see that, very nice.
Velvet boots with lovely sort of brown sort of action chevron stripes on them.
And of course, velvet, as we all know, listeners, a very hardy, hard-wearing clothing for if you are a warrior of some description. It will deflect many a bow and arrow.
Well, you've got to look good. You've got to look good in this position. You know, and although probably the softest of all the fabrics, listeners, velvet. And of course, that's topped off with a lovely green cap at a jaunty angle with a feather in it. Lovely feather.
A peacock or just a cock?
No, it's a peacock. Peacock's feather.
What, in that, yeah.
Well, actually, that's what I wanted. But the only green thing I could find, actually, was a sort of a one-piece lycra green bodysuit.
Well, of course, I recognise that from last year's New Year's Eve party, of course, when you came dressed as a Ninja Turtle.
Yeah, well, never mind me. What about you? You, what have you come as? How does that relate to the podcast, what you're wearing? What is that?
Well, Wayne, I am also in character, listeners. I have a striped apron on, a chef's hat one side, like the Swedish chef from The Muppets, apron, Swedish hat, and of course, give it away, I've got a frying pan in my hand.
What?
Who the hell is this? It's Friar Tuck.
Friar Tuck. It's F-R-I-A-R. It's an order. It's like a monk.
Oh,
it's
right.
It's like a monk order. You know,
I thought he was Robin Hood's cook. Okay.
No.
He's like a friar. I thought, you know.
More on him later.
Campfires.
More on him later, listeners.
In Ganguly and cook sausages.
No. They take vows of celibacy, you know, and that sort of thing. So they're very much not a friar.
Right, okay.
Well. Okay, so anyway, you've probably got a little inkling there, listeners, as to what this podcast's going to be about. A little guy called Robin Hood.
Robin Hood?
Robin Hood. Who is he? Well, this podcast, listeners, we're going to find out.
Oh. Now, before Robin Hood unleashes his bow, we would like to just say some thank yous. And we're thank you, I mean, all of you for downloading our podcast, but actually specifically to a number of patrons that we've got. So, you know, the patron service where you sign up, you can donate to podcasts. We have our first number of patrons. And
wonderful people.
Thank you very much. It really is appreciative. You know, you can get this podcast for free and it'll always be free, but it does help us with the costs.
The price of success,
yes,
being what it is, means that there are significant costs, unfortunately, for us, for Bandwidth. So any contributions, such as the ones you're about to hear about.
So, thank you, firstly, to Ben Mills from Australia.
Cheers, Benny.
Apparently he liked the guest appearance by Paul Hogan, of course, in Billy the Kid. So thanks again, Ben. And where would we be without Nimrod David, who also has been suggesting some fantastic ideas for future podcasts.
Thanks,
very much.
Nimmeister, you know who you are.
Yeah, he's been fantastic advice on the show as well, so that's really appreciated. And very recently, Samuel Kilsholm from Denmark, who has just started to support us on Patreon. So thank you all very much. It really is appreciated.
Yeah, cheers, Sam. And now, by donating to Patreon every month, now you might be a few dollars poorer, but let's face it, one podcast, the richer.
Oh, that's a sales line, if ever I heard one.
Richer in information and historical facts to wow your friends and spouses with. Simply log on to the Patreon site and fill in your details if you wish. You'll just see us on there, Historical Pod. Even the tiniest amount, which may seem embarrassing to yourself, is gratefully received.
It is. And if you don't fancy doing that, well, that's fine. We love you anyhow. And please just keep downloading the podcast and supporting. And if you can tell your friends about the podcast, that would be really appreciated. Okay, now, finally, onto the podcast. Wayne, what are we talking about then?
Well,
Robin Hood, as we know.
We've mentioned Robin Hood. Of course, it's not quite that simple. Now, I think we have to... We're in character, we're in the scene, we're in the place, but...
Got my frying pan in my hand.
We need to set the scene for you guys. What's happening? I think if we paint a picture for you, Matt, the listeners will be able to visualise and relate what you might be going through here, okay?
Okay.
So that's what we're going to do now, imagine.
I shall close my eyes and try to picture this as you say it.
Right, okay, now...
In my mind's eye, listeners.
Imagine, Matt, you're in the 13th or possibly 14th century Northern England, Matt. Okay?
Okay.
You're popping over to the next village to find a de-ticking stick for your sheep.
Okay. Yeah.
Riddled with parasites in those days.
Mm-hmm. I'd imagine I've probably got a few parasites in me as well.
A few ticks yourself.
Yeah.
You're in a time period of intellectual and economic darkness where everyone was either a brutal warrior or a filth-encrusted victim, basically scum. Which are you, Matt?
Well, I think I probably would be...
You're a filthy peasant! The sheep, remember?
Yeah. Yes, of course. Yes, I'm a filthy peasant. I am a filthy peasant.
That's it. That's the spirit. So society is barely a thing, Matt. And infrastructure is practically non-existent, of course. Right?
Okay. I'm imagining the peasants in the Monty Python Holy Grail.
Okay, well, don't get...
Who's
too...
Who's the king?
Don't get too fixated on the peasants,
okay.
Matt. Watch where you're walking, okay?
Okay.
Because the roads aren't very good. Infrastructure, nothing there. Don't bother trying to find your way to the next village on Google Maps, Matt, because there is basically very little or probably no mobile phone signal.
Okay, so no point having my phone then.
Absolutely not.
Okay.
So you have to rely on your prowess, Matt, and sense of direction. I'm sorry to say.
Jesus, that's going to be... Okay.
Dangerous times. Anything because, else? Yeah, it's dangerous. Warlords, bandits, and barbarians roam the land. Every surface is covered by a layer of dirt, and the general populace have the life expectancy of a San Francisco drag queen in an ISIS training camp. Very low.
Okay, so I'm pretty nervous about this, I have to be honest,
yes,
Wayne.
Yes,
it doesn't sound a very pleasant place to live. Mm. I'd be concerned about my person.
Yeah, very wise.
What is around me if I look about there and I'm sort of visualising my internal struggle in these conditions? What is it visually like?
Okay, so...
exactly where I am now.
Well, the trees seem taller.
Oh, really? Now, that's interesting. Is it because the air is cleaner and something like that? Less pollution?
Not really, no. You're only about 5 foot tall, you see.
Oh.
That's it. Poor diet, you see. Not great nutrition in those days, Matt.
Right, yeah. Yes, yeah. Right, okay, because we do grow bigger, don't we, through the centuries.
Exactly.
We're actually our tallest, on average, than we have been throughout the whole life cycle of humans.
That's right, listeners. And if you go to a castle, of course, and you see some of the old breastplates up on the wall, they look like they're a child's breastplate. Maybe it's the prince's breastplate, but no, they're breastplate for men. They were tiny.
So, for example, if we went into battle now, we could potentially hold a knight back by his head. And he'd be slashing
sort of flails his arms like that, yes.
Yeah, and he wouldn't get anywhere near us, and because we are basically giants to them.
Yeah, that's right. You'd just sort of like be wailing through them, towering over them, you know, as you run away. So imagine you're 5 feet tall, poor diet. But on the positive side, Matt, on this trip, you are wearing your best outfit.
What?
Your best, richest, joyous, most wonderful-looking outfit.
Well, you know me,
trip.
Wayne, I like to dress... to impress.
Yeah, well, you've got a fetching sort of slim fit, short sleeve, sack bag of crappy wool. but with a rather fancy sort of tufted trim, you know, you're looking pretty good. Almost wealthy.
I mean, when you're 5 foot covered in filth, you have to make the best effort you can with the white clothes, okay? Right?
Well, I guess so. Well, so we've set the scene, Matt. Now, let's bring it to life.
Ah, the beautiful countryside. The woods, this deep, dark woods. Let me go into it. It's a nice hike through the forest. Or maybe a bit grueling, though, due to the malnourishment I get from only eating, a very poor diet. But it's nice to be in this deep, dark, very sinister-looking wood in my very finest and richest-looking outfit. Oh, maybe I need to bring my confidence up with a little song. Dee dee da, dee 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 da, dee 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 da. Wow, there's some birds out here in this woods today.
Tweet, tweet.
Wow, there's quite a few birds out today. I wonder what sort of birds make that sort of call.
Tweet, tweet.
Oh, what is that bird? It sounds very strange. Is it a... Now, I heard someone say this at the village. Is it a chaffinch? Maybe a chaffinch? Oh, it's very dark in these woods. Of course, Steve the blacksmith said to me the other day, he was in the woods, and he saw a pair of great tits.
Tweet, tweet.
I don't suppose I'll be as lucky as that today, but I wonder... That sounds like a blue warbler.
Aha!
Sweet buggeration!
Wrong! Tis not a chaffinch or a blue warbler, but it's a robin.
Oh, my dilly-dally.
A Robin Hood. And this little birdie thinks he seems a worm caught on a hook.
Jesus, you shot an arrow at me. What the hell is wrong with you?
Ah, I meant to miss. Tis but a warning shot. But if you withhold your valuables from me, you may find I do not miss with my next shot.
Oh.
You look like you have a few coins on you, eh? Let me tell you, the poor will be thrilled. Have you met them at all?
Met who?
The poor.
I am the poor.
The poor, wonderful people. Oh, you simply must meet them. I know you'll like them. Simply charming people. I mean, they haven't got two pennies to rub together, but that's because they're poor, eh?
Yeah, very funny, very funny. Well, it's lovely to meet you, whoever you are, Mr. Hood. But I have to be on my way now, Mr. Hood. I have to get to the next village by nightfall. Good day to ye.
No, no, you don't. Don't move. I should warn you, I never miss with this bow. Well, hardly ever anyway. It certainly isn't worth taking the risk because I'm a very good shot.
Well, you missed me with your first shot.
No, look, I meant to. Look, I practice every day.
Wow, really? Every day? Well, there's not been a day when you've not practiced, like, well, been ill, you felt a bit tired?
Not absolutely every day, but most days. I expect I must practice 4 to 5 days a week, at
least.
For
how long, per day?
At least. Only some days, some weekends, like last weekend, there wasn't much time because I had to help Mother with the garden. But I should say definitely a solid 4 days a week, yes. Anyway,
yes.
You may as well know who is robbing you, my good man. So meet the famous, nay, the infamous Robin Hood.
Yeah, you've said your name already. Look, you can have these coins, it's all I've got, but I am poor. I mean that, poor. You're robbing from the poor, giving to the poor.
So there you are, listeners. Robert, Matt, you can come out of it now. Come out of
okay,
it.
Okay, I'm just...
Right. Back in the room.
Okay. I'm released from the character, now I'm back.
You're right, you're sweating a bit.
Yes, well, you know, it was pretty nasty what happened to me. I got held up by Robin Hood.
Jeez, oh, well, it can happen. Well, Robin Hood, Matt, Robin Hood.
Yeah.
We'll look into how this man achieved such fame and notoriety, which has endured through the ages so formidably. Was he a working class hero, Matt? Or simply a robbing hood?
Hood being the name of a footpad or a mugger, of course. He was a hoodlum.
That's right.
Is that where the hoodlum comes from?
Well, I mean, can it be that simple?
Yeah.
Or maybe he did, in fact, rob from the rich and literally give to the poor.
If indeed he did give to the poor, of course. How much did he actually supply to the cheeky chaps?
Yeah.
Because if it was you know, 5 or 10% of the actual loot, then that's pretty stingy and not worthy of a bard's tale.
No.
But, you know, how much of this Robin Hood that we, you know, talk about and we just did a scene about is just the fantasy of the 1920s Errol Flynn films, you know, and the, you know, Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves, and all that kind of stuff? And what is the actual real man behind the myth of Robin Hood?
Well, I don't know about you listeners, but I'm looking forward to finding out.
Oh, yes.
Now, before we turn our... let's face it, penetrating analytical minds to the man himself, I think we need to understand the environment in which he operated. We heard about it's a dangerous place he lives in.
Well, of course it is, yeah.
But really, we need to understand the cultural and political tensions of the time to see if this would amplify or indeed exemplify the tales about this man and his band of rogues.
And you talk about him being bad, you know, bad times he lived in. I mean, you're lucky to make it to 40 years old in those days, weren't you?
You were, yeah.
I mean, you've said middle age is basically about 25, 30 years old.
Yeah, that's right. It's good going. Good innings for a peasant, 25, isn't it? So we're at the end of the 12th century in England, and it's been a particularly, a very turbulent 150 years or so, Matt, isn't it? What's been going on?
Well, 1066, of course, saw the Norman invasion, the Norman...
Yes,
invasion.
Well, was normally in those days.
With William the Conqueror at its head, of course.
Yeah. And then shortly afterwards, in 1135, the aptly named Anarchy began, which was basically a big civil war, where thanks to kingly succession issues, the whole country went completely mental and saw a total breakdown of law and order, Matt.
The Archbishop of Canterbury, Thomas Becket, was brutally murdered, listeners, in 1170.
Yeah.
And then the Crusades kicked off in 1192.
Chaos.
It must have been tricky and worrying time for people who were already enduring, you know, a basically rough and violent existence.
Mm. Yeah. Indeed, it was a time. It was a time, Matt, really, where the sort of those sadistic and villainous personalities could really prosper.
I mean, the classic villain in the Robin Hood tales is primarily King John or Prince John.
Yeah.
As he's referred to in the stories associated with Robin Hood. We know that sometimes in our haste to find a villain in every situation, we end up painting some people as a hand-wringing, cackling cartoon villainry with, you know, little twirly moustaches and pointy beards.
Must have the pointy beard, yes.
Always the pointy beards. Just because the story would be boring if it was just a regular guy trying his best to maintain law and order.
Oh, yes,
in what is a very difficult, violent, troubling time where revolution can break out at any moment.
Yeah,
give the guy a break.
Yeah. A soft hand ain't going to work. Just look at the likes of, you know, Gaddafi, Assad.
Yeah, so again,
yeah, you know, you've got to have a hard hand to rule.
Let's keep away from the politics of the Middle East.
Yes, very wise. Okay, good. So in the Robin Hood tales, King John is painted as a sort of a cowardly usurper who tried to grasp, to claim the throne of England, while his dashing and heroic and handsome and great and brave and genuinely awesome brother Richard the Lionheart was off fighting the Crusades, as Matt mentioned. To add to his hateability, King John apparently raised taxes like a socialist government on speed and made life ever more miserable for the already pretty miserable peasants. But, Matt, as we know, the reality was different, of course. There are always two sides to every story, listeners. For starters, if you're one of these people who think King Richard the Lionheart was indeed awesome, I advise you to take a pause, maybe think again.
Well, the other thing I think about Richard Lionheart is he was out fighting a crusade in a foreign country. He didn't need to really be there, and he'd left the actual running of his kingdom, the boring
to
stuff.
To his administrators.
Yeah, the boring stuff that he didn't want to do. So, mind you, he's been kingly, and in those times, I guess, being kingly was battles and stuff, but more to leadership than fighting.
Yeah, just, basically, kingship to him was marching across foreign lands, killing the natives.
Yes. So, King Richard honestly thought that God wanted him to march across other countries and basically tear stuff up until the enemies were horribly killed, enslaved, or under the yoke.
Happy times.
Of the church. When he wasn't slaughtering heathens, hating Jews, and seizing land, he was at war with his brothers and father. Typical. In fact, Prince John was able to successfully undertake a rebellion in 1190s against the king's royal administrators.
Yeah, they, the administrators basically look after the kingdom while the king is away defining the definition of xenophobia.
Aha, well there you go. Yeah. Prince John became King John officially in 1199 when King Richard died at the ripe old age of 42.
42.
40 bloody two. Mm. That's actually my age now. Wow. Indeed, your age as well.
And, well, you probably look better than King John would have done. But then again, he probably didn't moisturise.
I actually look better than a lot of people.
Oh, right. Okay, well, actually, Matt, you know what? You know what? I've got a really funny story about how the king died.
Actually, how did he die? It's kind of shrouded a little bit of a mystery, isn't it?
Well, and you'll see why they probably wanted to keep it covered up, you know, because, as you've probably guessed already, listeners, the king was killed. It was all because of a kid with a crossbow and a frying pan. There's a lot of frying pans in the podcast.
Well, exactly. You know, this is, I obviously must have known this, hence why I got the frying pan.
It's typical.
Makes up for my fryer mistake.
Very clever. Earlier. Well, so this kid, right, this kid was such a nobody. Mm-hmm. That his name is not even recorded. So what happened was, the Lionheart came to this kid's land to suppress a revolt, as you do.
Yeah, peasants are revolting.
Yes, and they're rebelling.
Unclean.
Rebelling.
Smelly.
As well.
Revolting. Scum.
But, during the assault, his forces basically killed anyone who resisted, of course, including the kid's father and brother.
Well, of course, that's not funny. That's very sad.
That's not the funny bit.
It's not funny.
But with most of the defenders dead, King Richard thought he'd just go for a little stroll around the base of the walls, you know, to sort of take in the air, the smell of burnt flesh and blood, and have a little look at the mangled dead. There?
I mean, you know, that's... We might walk around a nice garden and look at the flowers nowadays, or peruse a nice monument. He simply liked to look at the dead.
That was it. That was a good battle.
Bloodthirsty man.
And so there at the base of those battlements, history tells us, was this kid, right? He was on the battlements. He was batting away arrows with this frying pan of his and shouting insults at the top of his little lungs. A right little fast starter, this guy. Spotting the king, the kid shouted a challenge and fired an arrow down at the king.
Wow.
But missed.
Ballsy little kid.
Missed by a long way. And King Richard, who clearly thought arrow wounds were something that happened to other people, basically stood there, legs apart, hands on hips, and cheered on the defender. Hilariously, the second arrow thudded into the king's shoulder.
Oh, jeez.
And so down he goes.
Oh, man.
And it's a bit embarrassing for him. And alas, for the king, the wound became gangrenous. Of course, a big problem in those days.
And I suspect a little bit of septicemia in that little wound as well, which, of course, as we know, even nowadays, is absolutely lethal.
For those of you not familiar with medical terms, listeners, it basically became horribly infected. And as a result of that infection, the king died. Although he
what
did...
What happened to the little kid, though?
Well, the king had that kid brought him on his deathbed, and he actually pardoned him.
Oh, that's good. Well, that is respect for King, yeah, it was like King this, Richard. This he saw some bravery and said...
He respects that.
And the kid can live at least and, you know, tell a tale of how he killed the king, I guess.
Yeah, that's right. But unfortunately for the kid, the king's retainers clearly did not approve of regicide in general, and they ignored the pardon and had the kid skinned alive.
Oh.
And, well, hung him too, just for good measure.
Oh, man. So, brutal times, no listeners. Winners. Brutal times. Well, it seems to me, listeners, that there is a moral to take from this story.
There often is.
It is, don't embarrass a king's pride, firstly, especially when that embarrassment actually kills the king himself, and you don't escape from the king's bodyguards in time.
Wise words, Matt. Wise words.
Possibly a very specific moral for a very targeted action. So back to King John, right? The reign of King John is generally regarded as a pretty disastrous time for him and the country in general. Although, as we'll see, there were some enduring benefits as well.
Mm-hmm.
He was a dribbling retard of a regent. If the reports are to be believed, it wasn't because he was a particularly vicious or cruel person.
Just normally vicious and cruel for a king?
Yeah, he'd be vicious and cruel for that period of time, which was pretty cool. Think Cersei, Game of Thrones. I always, you know, there's your yardstick for normal. It was just that he was actually awful at doing kingly things that we wouldn't be surprised, for example, if he wore his ermine cloak back to front or had his crown, his kingly crown, pointed the wrong side down, as it were.
Pointy side down. Yes, well, King John, I guess you could say he was sort of a really bad King Midas, in that everything he touched turned to utter shit. Right.
Just leave it be, it'll be fine if you touch it.
Bleep that bit out. So his marriage led directly to losing a large chunk of prime land in France. Nice one.
Well done. Well, tick number one.
And then his subsequent military campaign to try and regain that land was a screw-up of such spectacular proportions, it forced him to raise taxes to eye-watering levels and earned him a reputation for military incompetence, which actually gave him the nickname Soft Sword.
Well, Freudian connotations are implied on that, surely. The infamous tax hike was not dumped on the peasants straight away. No, as legend suggests, it was applied to the nobility and the clergy, the church.
Uh-oh.
Which had the effect of making everyone with money and power hate him.
Clever.
And of course, they then, of course, taxed the peasants. But initially he did tax the people with money, as would make sense. The sheer scale of his inexplicable ineptitude actually gets to the point where it passes contempt and you have to actually feel quite sorry for the guy.
Yeah.
As you say, he has the minus touch.
Well, he also had an almost Clouseau.
And Clouseau is, for younger listeners, he was a... Peter Sellers played a character called Inspector Clouseau in some films, which was a sort of bumbling French detective. And for all those older listeners, he is Inspector Clouseau of the Sauté.
Yeah. He has an almost Clouseau-like ability for finding complete failure in the most surprising of places, really. I mean, his ham-fisted attempt to influence the appointment of an archbishop ended up actually getting England excommunicated, for goodness sake.
Oh, man.
Although it's not as if he wasn't an intelligent guy, though. You know, he would have been well-educated, obviously, being brought up as a prince. In fact, he was regarded as one of the foremost legal minds of his day. And bizarrely, for such a military muppet, he is credited with creating the Royal Navy.
Well, right. Well, there you go. That's ticking the box, surely.
But unfortunately, he had zero, if not minus, charisma levels for all those D&D fans out there. And pretty much all of his kingly instincts seemed to be wrong.
Sure, Wayne. So to take a devil's advocate view on this.
Yeah,
he lost land.
He did.
He might have pissed away money.
Pissed it away.
He may have allowed the church to increase its stranglehold on Britain.
He did.
But if it wasn't for King John,
mm-hmm.
we wouldn't have the Magna Carta, right?
Mm-hmm.
If he had not done everything in his power, to make the barons detest him utterly, they would not have been moved to force him to sign the document.
The Magna Carta.
The document that is the Magna Carta.
Yeah.
That unalienable rights that they could demand from the king. So just remember this important lesson, children and young adults out there. You can be really, really bad at what you do and still make a positive contribution to society as a whole. The Magna Carta was basically a foundation of the modern law and democracy, basically made from an incompetent king.
Well, nice job. Nice job. Okay, so Robin Hood lived in this period of unrest and uncertainty with King John hanging over them, when an already hard life was made harder by a king who did not appear to care for the welfare of his subjects. Bad things are going to happen, aren't they?
Of course they are, yep.
There are several versions of the Robin Hood story, of course. We've got the classic Hollywood one, which is one of an incredibly handsome guy with surprisingly good shaving products for the time. Errol Flynn, you know, coated in those glorious garments of Lincoln Green, fighting and outwitting the evil sheriff of Nottingham, the lapdog of King John.
Also in tights, but these ones are black tights, because
yes.
he's evil.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah.
Outfit.
However, the first known literary reference of Robin Hood and his men was in 1377, and the Sloane manuscripts in the British Museum, you can see them today, have an account of Robin Hood's life, which states that he was born around 1160.
Times it right, yes.
In Loxley.
Loxley, yeah.
In South Yorkshire. And with that tantalising bombshell, we will steal ourselves away from our dear listeners and draw our first episode of Robin Hood to a close.
What? No! We can't stop there, Matt. There are so many exciting tales to tell and interesting characters to learn about. How can we do this?
Well, as the English peasants under King John knew all too well, life is simply not fair. So by snatching ourselves away at this critical juncture in the story, we are giving the listeners an insight to those tough, tough times.
Oh, yeah, okay. Difficult times, right, okay.
Let's look at it this way. It's not as bad as waiting for 2019 for the next series of Game of Thrones, is it?
Oof, yeah, awful.
Now that is terrible.
So listeners, that takes us to the end of our brief first episode. We just wanted to set the scene for you for Robin Hood. And in the episodes upcoming, to be released soon, we'll go into the details of him and his merry band and what they got up to.
Sounds very good. Can't wait.
You can't wait?
Well, I can't wait.
Well, why didn't you say so? Let's just do it now, then.
Yeah, let's do it now.
Let's not wait until next week and make the listeners wait. Let's just carry on.
Right, good. Carry on. Right, so tell me, let's tell the listeners more about Robin Hood.
The legends.
The legend that is.
We've heard a bit about the scene, the political scene and that sort of thing. So what about
the
legend?
Prince John, King John. We've learned about him. We've learned about the poor demise of Richard the Lionheart.
Very sad.
Very sad indeed, yes.
Well, Robin Hood, the legend. Yes, well, Robin Hood is certainly a romantic legend, isn't it, Matt? I mean, just think, Matt, a young man in tight-fitting clothing. Oh. He's probably well-muscled and rugged too, isn't he?
Of course, the old famous song, Robin Hood and his merry men.
Yes.
Robin Hood riding through the glen.
That's it. Very good, yeah.
Robs from the rich, steals from the poor.
No, doesn't steal from the poor, he gives to the poor.
So
not so easy, is it?
Damn, you see, that's where you can easily go wrong in life.
Anyway, just think, right, it's a romantic legend. So, he's well-muscled, rugged, probably smells of pine needles. Lives in the forest, got a nice smell.
Yeah.
Possibly noble and handsome, yet a rogue. Does that invoke any sort of invoke any romantic feelings in you, Matt, at all?
No, it doesn't.
No?
Oh. Because, well, it just doesn't.
Oh, okay, fine.
But, yeah.
I just noticed a little bit of bead of sweat on your forehead, that's all. But the earliest known mention of Robin Hood, actually, is in a William Langland 1377 work, that far back. It's actually called Piers Plowman.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure why, but in that sort of ballad, a character mentions that he knows Rhymes of Robin Hood. Bit of a giveaway.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, this and other references from the late 1300s suggest that Robin Hood was well established as a popular legend by that time.
Well, one source of that legend may lie in the old French custom of celebrating May Day.
Yeah.
A character called Robin des Bois, or Robin of the Woods, was associated with the spring festival and may have been transplanted to England with a slight name change, bit of an update on the image and all of those things. May Day celebrations in England in the 1400s featured a festival king called Robin Hood.
Oh, yes, of course. And the May Day festival is something that happens in the UK and France. Now, a collection of ballads.
That's a popular song, often telling a story, maybe by a bard.
That's right. Collection of ballads about the outlaw Robin Hood, which was called in the old language of the time, A Little Jest of Robin Hood.
Can you do that again?
Not sure.
Just do that again.
Robin Hood. Or Hood.
Space H O. D-E.
Yeah.
So it's Hold. Yeah, I like
it. Not quite sure what the pronunciation is there, yeah.
But I like it.
Well, this was published in England around 1489, so it's fairly enduring, isn't it? From that and other medieval sources, scholars know that Robin was originally associated with several locations in England. We've touched on some of these already. One was Barnsdale in the northern district of Yorkshire. The other was Sherwood Forest in Nottinghamshire, up in the north again, where his principal opponent was, of course, the vicious and oppressive Sheriff of Nottingham with his little sort of evil goatee beard and no doubt black leather.
I want to pluck his heart out with a spoon.
Yeah, it was very much like that. It was very much like that.
Kevin Costner's, Alan Rickman's...
Amazing.
Sheriff of Nottingham.
Amazing. Stole the show, didn't he?
He did.
Robin's companions included a chap called Little John. He was actually quite a big guy, wasn't he?
Yeah, you know, funny what they did there. They
called him Little
Very,
Man.
Very funny indeed.
He sort of helped him rob people. You know, he was a tough guy. Alan Adale, that was his bard and his sort of publicist.
Less well known, Alan Adale, I think.
Less well known, actually.
Yeah.
Much was, I think he was a miller's son, actually. He was a vicious little so-and-so, apparently, as we'll hear later. And the cheeky... Will Scarlet was the other one. I think, who was he played by in the Kevin Costner film?
That was Christian Slater.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. His cheeky little face.
Yes.
I remember that well.
So Robin Hood, of course, as we all know, was a champion archer.
Brilliant. Brilliant at it.
Now, once he snuck into a Nottingham archery tournament.
He did do that.
The prize for winning the contest was an arrow with a silver shaft and a golden head and feathers.
Worth a lot in those days.
It was a tough contest. Some people say Robin's leading opponent shot an arrow into the centre of the target.
Ooh, hard to beat.
It seemed impossible to beat, of course.
Yeah, right in the middle, bullseye. But bold Robin Hood, and I'm sure there's no embellishment here, took aim and shot an arrow with such uncanny precision. You might not be able to believe this, Matt, but it split his opponent's arrow in twain, two, straight down the middle. Thus, as you might expect, Robin won the tournament and the gold, that sort of gold and silver arrow trophy thing. And some tales say Robin can split a mere branch from over 300 yards away. Now, I don't know about you, Matt, but in your 40s, you can't even see a branch 300 yards away.
Well, it was quite. And these myths have surrounded him for years, haven't they? They've surrounded him and they've been told through eons by the bards. But he was also a good swordsman.
Yes.
And handy with a quarterstaff.
He loved to get his hands around a good bit of wood.
Yeah.
Quarterstaff.
But for all this, Robin actually loses a lot of his fights.
He did.
It is in, rumour has said. There are many stories where Robin meets a stranger often a simple tradesman.
Normal like guy.
Like a potter,
yeah.
A pindar,
yeah.
A peddler, a tanner, and so on. Robin picks a fight, but the stranger often fights Robin Hood to a standstill or even overpowers him.
Kicks the crap out of him, generally. Just a normal average guy walking, he tries to rob him and ends up on his back with a guy pounding him in the face.
You know, then, you know, the rumour has it, Robin then asks the stranger to join his band, and this is how many of the famous Merry Men joined Mr. Robin Hood.
Yeah, he did, that's right. Actually, when Robin lost to the potter chap, he traded clothes with the potter. And just because this is the sort of guy he is, and went to Nottingham to trick the sheriff into the Greenwood.
To come into the Greenwood, chase him out, and then subsequently robbed him. Yeah.
In a similar story, actually, he traded clothes with a butcher. What is it with this guy? Yeah. He loves to dress up, doesn't he?
Different jobs.
Strange choice of clothes, though. Trades clothes with a butcher.
He's like an old-fashioned Mr. Ben. For any of you old enough, which will be over 40... Mr. Ben is a man who changed jobs every week, doesn't he? He goes into his little shop, puts on a different outfit, and there he is.
Well, you know, I mean, the bards do describe Robin Hood, actually, as a master of disguise, but I think just popping some clothes on isn't really much of a disguise.
Fake nose and, glasses.
Oh, Robin, you're wearing some butcher's trousers. I
mean, it's still Robin, though.
Because apparently, he dresses up as an old woman once, as well, and he sort of, like, tricked an evil bishop into the woods and robbed him as well. I don't know what he's doing, tricking all these men coming out into the woods. And
well, there's a name for that in this day and age, and it's let's just say it's on the register.
And as a sort of a pilgrim turned hangman, dressed up again, he rescued three of his men who had sort of been captured, and you know, he freed them before they could hang them. And as a bold harper, he rescued Alan O'Dell's bride once. So it's lots of tales of daring do and dress up do.
And maybe they just needed that hero in that time.
Well, yeah.
You know, the Robin Hood ballads.
Boring, wasn't it? Boring.
It's boring.
So you need
this thing, a bit like King Arthur, you know. You need the mystique around these people.
If you're sitting around the village fire... Yeah. You know, there's nothing, not much going on, is there? You know, you've got an ale in your hand.
Some old crones there going, let me tell you the story of Robin Hood. Robin Hood? Robin Hood. Oh, yeah. And off they go.
Certainly sounds very romantic.
The Robin Hood ballads reflect the discontent of the ordinary people with political conditions in medieval England.
Awful it was.
They were especially upset about new laws that kept them from hunting freely in the forests.
Poaching.
That they were now claimed as the property of the kings and nobles, so the free land was becoming less free. Social unrest and rebellion swirled for England at the time the Robin Hood ballads first became popular. This unrest erupted in an event called the Peasants' Revolt in 1381.
Yeah. The peasants were revolting!
Yes, they were. They had no moisturiser, no shampoo, and very limited makeup options.
Choice
of colour? Brown.
Good to let the skin's natural oils work their magic, though, of course.
Indeed.
You know. So anyway, by the 1500s, Robin was a nobleman, some say, who had fallen into disgrace and taken to the woods to live with other outlaws. Remember I said about the noble visage?
Yes, of course.
Robin also acquired a girlfriend in the later stories named Maid Marian. You might know that name. And a new companion... A monk called Friar Tuck, big fat friar.
Big fat jolly guy, likes to drink.
But, you know, I mean, we think, Matt and I talked about this, and we think that both of these, the girlfriend and the friar, might have been added by the church, actually, you know. Firstly, to prove that a bunch of young men enjoying one another's company in the woods is a completely normal heterosexual thing to do, and that Robin, being so well-groomed... So, he's a straight and macho guy. He's got a girlfriend, for God's sakes. Plus, he also loved the church. He must love the church. Hence his friar buddy.
It sort of gives them a legitimacy they maybe didn't have. And if they were heroes, the church wanted in on the action, possibly.
It does feel like that, because it came afterwards. But there's a bit of that obvious paradox of stealing and violence, of course, with the friar. But we'll just brush that under the carpet for now. So, if you remember, Matt, earlier, You had a Woodland meeting. Did you actually met Robin earlier?
I did, and I it was a great moment for me to meet a mythical character,
yeah,
or a legendary character like Robin Hood.
Well, it's difficult to know how you'd react, isn't it, in those situations when you meet these kind of people. But if you remember, you were standing there with sort of a quivering shaft between your legs.
Yeah.
He'd fired an arrow at you.
Yeah.
That's what that was.
That's what it was, yeah. Luckily it missed.
So,
it's not that good a shot.
So let's go back to your Woodland meeting now, Matt.
Okay, let's do
see
that.
What would have happened next.
Okay. Well, it's been nice to meet you, Mr. Hood.
Of course.
Well, I really need to get on my way now because I need to obtain my sheep de-ticking stick. Look, are you really Robin Hood? I mean, I've heard the stories, the legends, you know, the bards, but are you really him?
Am I Robin Hood? Is Will Scarlet a puff in tights?
Oi!
Look, there he is, giving you a little wave. Is Friar Tuck a big fat tub of lard with a ridiculous haircut and a particularly unhealthy appetite for God's creatures? There he is. He loves a good spit roast. Hey, Friar?
Hey, Robin.
Is Maid Marian a hot little honey with thighs like a pair of wonderfully smooth ashbow staves? Look, there she is, peasant.
Oh, Robin.
Dear.
You're adorable.
The one with the unibrow. No cosmetics out here in the forest, you see. That's what it is.
Right. Well, it's fascinating to meet you at last, Mr. Hood. I mean, incredible. But there is one question I have always wanted to ask you, actually.
Of course, fire away. I suppose you want to know how I was able to become so amazingly popular and successful, eh? Well, oh, ask away before I impale you with my dangerous weapon, and not talk about my sword. Sorry, it gets lonely out here in the woods.
That's quite all right, Okay, what confuses me is this. You rob from the rich, right?
Well, damn right I do. Bloody great at it, too.
You rob the rich and you give it all to the poor.
Not all wrong.
Right?
I love giving it to the poor, eh? Bang!
No. Now, that's the bit I don't understand, you see. Your men risk their lives in combat, don't they?
Oh, yes. Very brave, you see.
You risk torture and a certain horrible, horrible, painful, slow death if you're caught, correct?
Well, I suppose so, yes.
You live out here in the forest in a complete squalor, if I'm honest. I mean, look around here. It's pretty rubbish, isn't it? Amongst the dew and damp and the wolves and the bears in a cold, food, barren existence, correct?
Yes.
You work your butts off. And you put the lives on the line every day to pay your money to the poor, who just sit around on their butts all day poking cows and drinking homebrew.
Okay, shut up now. You're upsetting the merry men.
The poor are laughing at you. They're saying, don't worry, my flea-ridden comrade. There is no need to ask to work today. Let Robin Hood and his band of merry mugs bring in the bacon for us. They'll give us money for free. Meanwhile, the taxes will take a fall, local service and roads will crumble, and the king will likely need to begin a war to secure more loot and funds. It seems a very strange choice for you lot to make.
Yeah. I said shut up! Shut up!
I mean, I'm not surprised they don't say Robin Hood and his bunch of completely gullible Muppets or something like that. I mean, think about it.
Right.
It kind of...
Right, what? That's it. That's it. Shoot him. Shoot the bastard.
Bah!
Oh, I think you upset him there, Matt. You made a good point, though.
Well, yeah. You know, what was in it for them?
It seems an odd existence, doesn't it? Living like a beggar in the woods and risking disease and death every day. If they get caught, they get tortured to death, aren't they?
Which, less, you know, it's easy to say, tortured to death. If you think about what tortured to death is, that's horrendous.
Well, it's not good, is it?
It's horrendous.
It's not good.
There's
pokers and all sorts. Well, what is striking about the Robin Hood stories is that they reveal that, in an age when the rule of law was respected as the foundation of good government, those who put themselves outside the law, like Robin and friends, had suddenly become popular heroes.
So there you go.
It's another paradox. This is in complete contrast to public perceptions of the outlaw at the beginning of King Henry II's reign, and shows that the existing order had come to be regarded as tyrannical, because tyranny was the abuse of law. So if
the existing order was founded on the arbitrary will of evil men who could twist the law to their own ends, then it was the role of the outlaw to seek redress and justice by other means.
Yeah, redress. See, robbing from the rich, giving to the poor, yeah.
In a violent age, these men were invariably violent. Mm. Robin Hood and his contemporaries were cunning, merciless, and often brutal.
Yes, in one instance, actually, Much, the miller's son, murders a monk's page, like sort of an apprentice, to prevent him giving them away.
Yeah.
So he kills him in cold blood. Yeah.
We think about the, in our previous podcast we did, The Highwaymen, and we talked about Dick Turpin. Dick Turpin was essentially...
He's a dick.
Yeah, he was a murdering, horrible thug man. There was not a lot of romance about Dick Turpin, but of course romance has strung up about him. Has sprung up or strung up? He was strung up
he
in
was,
the end.
Yeah,
but sprung up about him. So yes, maybe similar here, you know. They had to do some pretty nasty stuff, these guys, I'm sure. Yeah. But by the codes of their time, these men were honourable.
Apparently
you've got
so.
To put it in context to the time they lived in.
Yeah, and in all these tales, of course, the forest. That's the thing. The forest figures prominently. If the forest wasn't there, you know, these tales wouldn't have anywhere near that same romance, I don't think. Was this symbolic, one wonders, Matt?
Mm.
Because the forest in the Middle Ages, it's not... Oh, we'll think that a forest is just some woods.
Mm-hmm.
But a forest in the Middle Ages included very extensive areas of cultivated land, as well as woods and wasteland as well, sort of barren land.
Let's not forget what those woods would have been like as well. You know, if you ever go into the deep, dark woods, which, that you know, we don't really have as many of those in the UK as much anymore, but some of those dark woods, are, you know, they are really forbidding places.
Well, if any of you, non-UK-based listeners have been to the UK, you know, you might see sort of the green fields and that sort of thing, but of course, back in the day, that was all forest.
Yeah.
Like you get to a high bit of land, all you can see is forest.
Yeah.
And there were bears and wolves and bandits in there. So they were usually the private preserve of the king and his officers, and were protected by a harsh series of forest laws that Matt mentioned earlier.
Mm.
You know, like, you know, poaching and so on. And there's no appeal for it. You know, you couldn't even go to like the ecclesiastical, like the church courts, to appeal it. It was a law, you broke it, some bad things are going to happen. No appeal.
Indeed, forest law was extremely unpopular amongst all sections of society. But it achieved its purpose of retaining vast areas of semi-wild landscape over which the king and his court could hunt, which, of course, was very important, part of their culture. Yet the very wilderness of the land made it a perfect place for fugitives to hide out in. And this is why such areas as Sherwood Forest and Barnsdale feature so prominently in outlaw legend.
Yes, and within these sort of literary references that we've been talking about, there's nothing to suggest that Robin Hood should necessarily date to the time of King John. In fact, the only king mentioned is Edward our Comely King.
Mm-hmm.
You know. Why is he a comely king, Matt? What's he up to?
Well, I think it had a different meaning then.
Oh, okay. He was a nice guy, I think, is what they're trying to say.
Edward the Nice, really. Yeah.
That sort of probably refers to a visit to Nottingham of King Edward II in 1324. Now, it's sort of the end of the 13th century, start of the 13th century, that all these stories tend to allude to. So 1324 is possible. Yet a court roll from Berkshire, where we are, indicates that the legend of Robin Hood dates earlier than this. So, which is it?
Well, later versions of Robin Hood legend placed more emphasis on Robin's nobility and on his romance with Marian than on the cruelty and social tension that appear in the earlier ballads.
Well, not so romantic, is it? Social tension and cruelty.
In addition to inspiring many books and poems over the centuries, Robin Hood has become the subject of several operas in modern time and numerous movies. Of course, we mentioned Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves.
Men in Tights.
Of course, the better one.
The better one. And
Men in Tights.
And the one that... what's his name? He was in Master and Commander, wasn't he? Russell Crowe.
Yeah, Russell Crowe. That was a good one. Russell,
yeah, and it was named, rather unimaginatively, I thought, Robin Hood.
Yeah, but he played...
It was good, though.
Longshadow or someone like that, wasn't it? I forget the character he played, but yes.
Well, anyway, let's examine some more of these tales now, though. So, one of the medieval ballads about Robin Hood involved Sir Guy of Gisborne.
Okay, another famous character there.
Yeah. Robin and his comrade Little John had an argument and parted in this particular ballad. And while Little John was on his own, the Sheriff of Nottingham captured him, tied him to a tree, like you do. Robin ran into Sir Guy, who was sort of like a minion, if you like, of the Sheriff of Nottingham, who had sworn to slay the outlaw leader. And when they discovered each other's identity, their enemies, of course, they drew their swords and fought, as you might expect.
A bloody battle.
And Robin actually killed Sir Guy. Here he goes again. What do you think he's going to do?
I reckon that what he's going to do is put on his clothes.
He popped on his clothes. Yes. Presumably they fit perfectly.
Yeah.
And now...
Pop a big red gash of blood that's down the, you know, the front of it.
Well, the ballad then says that he is now by default disguised as Sir Guy.
Yeah.
I don't know if he's popped a little fake tash or something, or just popped the clothes on. But it must be pretty good, though, because he actually persuaded the sheriff to let him do the deed and kill Little John. He was tied to the tree, remember?
Yeah, oh yeah, yeah.
So he gets his sword, pulls his sword back. What could happen? Instead of slaying Little
John... He's going to get dressed up as Little John.
He kills Little John and puts his clothes on. No, instead of slaying Little John, of course, he brings the sword down, slashes the rope, frees him, and they sort of like... him and Little John then proceed to sort of like drive off the sheriff and his men.
Ah, very good.
Very heroic.
If only disguises were that simple, though.
Yes, also very improbable.
Just put on someone else's clothes and da-da, you are now become that person. Another old story known as Robin Hood and the Monk.
Oh, right.
Also began with a quarrel between Robin and John. That's Little John. Robin went into Nottingham to attend the church, being a good, kingly, God-fearing man. But a monk recognised him and raised the alarm. Obviously, his disguise wasn't that good in that.
Backfired,
that
didn't it?
Yeah. Robin killed 12 people before he was captured.
12? Yeah. 12, okay. Well, fine.
And assuming these were 12 people 12 just going... Yeah, 12 kids hanging around. This was the choir.
Just went crazy.
On the way to church. Killed he just 12, went and killed them
killed
all.
12 kids, 5
out
dogs,
the way,
2 cats.
I'm a hero. Da-da-da. When word of his capture reached Robin's comrades in the forest, they planned to rescue him because obviously he got captured in the process of killing the 12 kids. I'm sure there were 12 swordsmen guys.
Killed 12 kids, then the monk just punched him out.
Punched him out. A big sort of frying pan, boing, in the face or something as he was running out the door. So when word of his capture reached Robin and his comrades in the forest, they planned a rescue. As the monk passed by on his way to tell the king of Robin's capture...
Big news.
Little John and Much seized and they beheaded him. That's good.
Why not? That's
something
that
I should do to a member of the church. John and Much, in disguise, of course, because they then probably got disguised as a monk, visited the king in London and then returned to Nottingham bearing documents sealed with the royal seal.
Which must have taken weeks, of course, that journey.
Yeah, absolutely. The sheriff, not recognising them, of course, because...
Got clothes on.
They got
different clothes on,
slightly different clothes on than before, welcomed the two men and treated them to a feast.
That's nice of him.
That night, Little John and Much killed Robin's jailer and set Robin free.
That's what they do.
By the time the sheriff realised what had happened, the three outlaws were safe in Sherwood Forest, dressed in different clothes.
Wow. Well, it's so simple, isn't it? I mean, this sort of buccaneering life is a piece of cake.
Yeah.
Reading these ballads.
Yeah. Well, you can see this is where they get Robin Hood from, don't they? They obviously leave the fact that they've beheaded a monk and killed 12 people, possibly churchgoers.
It's a bit brutal, isn't
it? But, yeah. Wow. I mean, they've obviously dressed up and, you know, they got rid of some of the unpleasantness about him.
Well, Robin Hood's role is the enemy of the people who held power and a protector of the poor, so he's, you know, against the elite, protector of the poor, was clearly illustrated in lines from that other ballad we mentioned earlier, A Little Jest of Robin Hood.
I think that
is how it's pronounced.
You could do that again,
A Little Jest of Robin Hood. That is basically you're hearing ancient English there, listeners, if you're not from here. Robin instructed his followers to do no harm to farmers or countrymen, but to beat and bind, in quotes, the bishops and archbishops, and never to forget the chief villain, the High Sheriff of Nottingham. Remember the guy with the little goatee beard? Some ballads ended with the sheriff's death, presumably that's a happy ending. In others, the outlaws merely sort of embarrassed and humiliated the sheriff, sort of carry-on film style, presumably. They were holding a ladder, turned around, hit him in the butt, he fell over.
Into some,
And sort of stole his riches and stuff. And in one ballad, the sheriff was robbed and then forced to dress in outlaw green and
They're at it again.
Yeah, they love a good dress-up.
They love to dress up.
And then he was forced to dine with Robin and his buddies in the forest. Bit of a strange punishment.
These guys do sound like a bunch of thespians. You know, a bunch of drama sorts. They just love to get dressed up and become a different character. Okay, so who is the real Robin? That's what the listeners want to know.
Yes.
What inspired all of these tales? Now, you're going to have to bear with me on this one, listeners. This is the King's Remembrances Memoranda Roll of Easter 1262.
Oof, yes, that's very good. Now, it's a census, isn't it? The Memoranda Roll thing.
So this is a census, right? And in this census, it says, it has some notes about the pardoning of the prior of Sandalford for seizing, without warrant, the chattels of a one William Robin Hood.
Ah.
A fugitive. Now, this case cross-referenced with the role of the justices in the Eyre in Berkshire in 1261, in which a criminal gang is outlawed, including a William, son of Robert de Lefevre, whose chattels were seized without warrant by the prior of Sandalford.
Evidence. Okay,
so the two things are linked together, but William Robin Hood is the link to it all.
And this William, son of Robert, and William Robin Hood, we think were probably one and the same, actually. And some clerk, during this transcription, had written written the name down differently, or changed the name. It follows that the man who changed the name knew of the legend and equated the name of Robin Hood with outlawry. Remember, he was listed as a fugitive.
Yes.
This is merely the earliest of several such references to Robe Hoods or Robin Hoods, and they're most of them all outlaws, actually. And after the mid-13th century, it provides a useful sort of terminus antiquem for the existence of the legend, right? And Robin Hood must have existed before 1261, we think, for his name to have been misused in such a way.
And we should be not surprised at such misuse. There are numerous cases in the 13th and 14th century of outlaws deliberately taking on the pseudonyms of Robin Hood and Little John.
Yeah.
And it seems likely that the original Friar Tuck, who got accredited to the legend, was one of Robert Stafford, who was active in Sussex between 1417 and 1429. Yet this in itself indicates just how difficult it is to tie Mr. Robin Hood down, since each misuse of the legend adds details of its own. So who was the original one? I'm Brian, so is my wife. You know, that's the problem here, isn't it? So many people are calling themselves Robin Hood.
Yeah.
It's simply not possible to locate the historical Robin Hood with any certainty. This possibly indicates that the legend as we have it already derives from two separate sources. Probably two separate Robin Hoods. The Scottish historian John Mayer, writing in 1521, maintained that Robin Hood was active in 1193 to 94, at the time of John's attempted coup against Richard the Lionheart, Prince John, that is. And it is possible to construct an argument which supports this.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, and backing you up, Matt, there, actually.
And thank you very much.
I can tell you that on the 25th of July, 1225, the Royal Justices held an assize.
Basically a judicial inquest.
Yep. At York, a big city in the day. when the penalties were recorded in the Michaelmas roll of the Exchequer, they loved lists in those days, didn't they?
Yeah.
They included 32 shillings and 60 for the chattels of one Robert Hodd, fugitive.
Again. Him and his chattels.
The account was carried forward into the following year when he acquired the nickname Hobblehod, or Hobhod.
Hogwarts.
And indicates that he had been a tenant of the Archbishop of York, actually, so that's the right area.
So this is the only possible original bearing of the name Robin Hood, who is known to have been an outlaw.
There are other Hoods in Wakefield, but none of them seem to have been fugitives.
An epitaph recorded by Thomas Gale in 1702 recorded that a grave purporting to be that of Robin Hood lay at Kirklees.
Where the legend claims he was killed.
Actually. And dated it,
1247. Which is about right, actually. That said, you know, you're probably thinking, listeners, it's the evidence is a bit flimsy. All right, and you know,
right.
We won't challenge you on that, but it is evidence nonetheless, and we'll take it to support our argument. On this evidence, it is possible to construct a chronology. A bit of a loose one, but it's a chronology nonetheless. Robin was active in the 1190s. He was an outlaw by around sort of 1220, 1225. Dead by 1247, and quite literally a legend by 1261. Quite frankly, I wouldn't stake my can of Coke on it right here, Matt, let alone my house.
Mm-hmm.
And John Major's dating is purely arbitrary, really. And two of his contemporaries give Robin's dates as 1283 to 5 or 1266. While the full date on that Kirklees gravestone that Matt mentions is 25 calends decembris, December. 1247. It's impossible as there is no 25 calends in the Roman calendar, actually, so that date can't be right.
So as obscure as ever, so how did we meet... How did he meet his end? After all his adventures, you'd expect Robin to die peacefully in his sleep next to an elderly maid, Marian, having finally stolen everything there is to steal... From the wafy, the wafy and wealthy.
Just thin people, he wrote.
And paradoxically, giving it all to the poor to start the whole cycle anew.
Yeah, he robs to the rich, he gives to the poor, they become the rich, he has to rob them, give it to the poor who used to be the rich.
And the cycle goes on, he's going, what have I started? But no, he is basically killed in a rogue medical procedure.
Yeah.
Back to our history of medicine here.
Yeah.
Legend says, and...
There's that word again. Legend.
Yeah. So, yes, legend says that Robin Hood was wounded in a fight and fled to a convent.
Ooh, as you do.
The head of the nuns was his cousin, actually, and he begged her for help. She made a cut so that the blood could flow from his vein, a common medical practice of the time.
Yeah.
As we say, see episode 14 and 15, The History of Medicine, listeners.
Yes, very interesting episodes. Now, bloodletting procedures like this have fallen out of favour, really, ever since the medical profession realised it was basically mental.
With no benefit whatsoever. Let's weaken the body even further so it can't fight off infection.
Yeah. But at the time, of course, it was basically the equivalent to a flu jab.
Mm-hmm.
Right, open them up. Unknown to Robin, however... she was his enemy.
Oh, bloody hell, you can't trust your family, even your cousins.
So she did this bloodletting, you know, she opened a vein, sorry for the squeamish, but then she left him without tying up that vein, right? So she left him sort of basically bleeding in a locked room. She locked the door.
Oh.
So, yeah, crazy bitch, basically. Not really nun-like, is it? Not really nun-like at all.
Well, it's, you know, it's pretty horrible way to go out, really.
I don't know what her beef with him was, actually, but she didn't like him for whatever reason. And severely weakened, he sort of sounded three very faint blasts on his horn, like... yeah, musical instrument, I mean, that is. See, listeners? Sounds forlorn.
The last one, of course, is probably collapsing. His lifeblood slipping away.
But nonetheless, despite the weak, forlorn cries from the horn, his friends in the forest heard his cry for help. And then came to the convent. But unfortunately, Matt, they were too late to save Robin. And he shot one last arrow. And they decided to bury him where it landed.
Now, I've got a problem with that, though. It's right. It's a strange,
it's weird, isn't it?
It's a strange thing to do, rather than as you're just dying, going, oh, I just want one last arrow, please, lads. I mean, have you tried to pull a longbow back?
You know, oh, yeah, he was weakened.
I mean, he was weakened.
Like 300 pounds.
He's got
more
blood
weight
coming out of him. He's locked in a room.
Yeah. He's got a...
Let's see. So it's a bit of an anticlimactic way to die if you.
If you're a bike messenger or something, let
yeah,
alone.
Yeah, well, absolutely, yeah. So for the legendary hero like Robin Hood, it is impossibly sad and pointless.
Mm.
The story must have seemed a little lame, even centuries ago. So another writer must have come in and added the firing of the arrow bit, we assume.
Yeah, and that writer, if they did that, you know, rather than adding a sort of a romantic epilogue to the life of a famous hero, all this means is that on top of getting bled to death by a crazed evil nurse, you know, that arrow goes off and Robin Hood is basically buried in some random peasant's backyard.
Yeah,
isn't he?
Yeah,
like the, yeah, yeah. Rhubarb.
Where the arrow ended.
You know, or...
fed into a dung heap or something.
Yeah. Oh no, got buried under bollocks. That. Yeah. Buried with a pigsty. But that said, you know, he's buried in a random peasant's backyard. A fitting end, perhaps, to a man of the people, he says thought-provokingly.
Mm. Over time, the image of Robin as a clever, light-hearted prankster gained strength. The tales in which he appeared as a highway robber and murderer were forgotten and, of course, rewritten. And thus, the tales of Robin that we have today came to life.
Yeah, so there you go, listeners. The tale, legend and man of Robin Hood.
Robin Hood.
But before we go, listeners, let's just leave you with some bit of fun. Let's just hear that ancient English again. It's mystical. Imagine, you know, you're in the forest.
Chaucer's reading it to you.
Chaucer's reading it to you. You're in the forest, you're surrounded by mist and druids and stone circles, that sort of thing. And a bard comes up to you. I'll try it first, Matt. Feel free to join in at home, listeners, with this. I'll do it the first time. You can join in with Matt the second time. That ballad name. A Little Jest of Robin Hood. There it is. Mysterious, isn't it?
I love it. I love that.
Brings the ancient land to life. You go. Ready, listeners?
I've been waiting to say. I didn't get one of these. A Little Jest of Robin Hood.
And that brings to an end, listeners, the tale.
Well, it's A Little Jest of Robin Hood.
Brings
comes
to
an end.
A Little Jest of Robin Hood. one last thing, listeners. Just a big thank you to all of our patron contributors. Much appreciated. And thank you, Kevin Hennessy. You joined us very recently. Much appreciated. It all really helps.
Yeah, thank you very much. And keep it coming. It really does make a difference.
Now, Matt, before we go, do you want to give the listeners a sneak peek of what is up next or episodes coming?
Yeehaw! Yes, I do. Back to the American West, I think, here. So we've covered outlaws in Billy the Kid. We've covered the Native Americans in the Battle of Bighorn. We're now going to cover the lawmen of the American West.
Ooh.
Lots
tough,
of different lawmen.
Tough men.
You've got the Texas Rangers. You've got the Mounties. You've got a whole bunch of different area, little different people that you may have heard of, some you may not have heard of.
Excellent. Well, we'll look forward to that then, listeners. And so, of course, by the usual means, contact us at any time with your suggestions or questions. And we'll see you next time. Bye for now.
Goodbye.
Bravely bold Sir Robin, brought forth from Camelot. He was not afraid to die, oh, brave Sir Robin. He was not at all afraid to be killed in nasty ways. Brave, 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 brave Sir Robin. He was not in the least bit scared to be mashed into a pulp, or to have his eyes gouged out and his elbows broken, to have his kneecap split and his body burned away, and his limbs all hacked and mangled, brave Sir Robin. His head smashed in and his heart cut out and his liver removed and his bowels unplugged and his nostrils raped and his bottom burnt off and his penis...
That's enough music for now, lads.